I want to talk to you about walking down another street. And this other street is a street in which you have an awareness that not only do you have a physical body, but you have come to believe that this physical body is who you are, and that you have locked yourself into these five senses and decided that whatever evidence they provide for you is how you identify and define your reality. By what I see, by what I hear, by what I smell, by what my wife, by life looks like, by how much money I have, by the stuff that I possess. And this is the world of the ego, and this is the world of the false self. The false self is the ego. The ego is the part of us that has come to believe that who I am is defined by these six things. Who I am is what I have. And so we spend a big hunk of our life attempting to get as much stuff as we possibly can. The Tao teaches something very different. Let go of everything you have. Ego teaches us you are what you have. The Tao teaches us let go of everything that you have. Do less and accomplish more. The second thing that the ego teaches us is that who I am is not only what I have, but who I am is what I do, what I accomplish. And so we spend a big hunk of our lives believing that the way that we become, quote, successful, happy, fulfilled, self-actualized, whatever it might be, is on the basis of what I accomplish, what my resume looks like, how many promotions I get. And so we send our children off to school and we ask them to learn to identify themselves on how much they get and what they accomplish. Your grades become more important than what it is that you are studying. What you own, what clothes you wear, what labels you have, and so on. And we become obsessed with this kind of absurdity. And this is the false self at work. The third thing that the ego teaches us is that I am what other people think of me. I am my reputation. So becoming obsessed with our reviews, what people think of us, other people's opinions, getting the approval of others. We talk about peer group approval needs and so on. I have eight children that aren't concerned about those things. They were never raised with that kind of a mentality. The whole idea of, you know, trying to please other people was something that they consistently heard from their mother and myself, that this isn't important to us. We don't, we're not attached to that. And this kind of an attachment. So the Tao teaches us that what you think of me is none of my business. What the ego teaches us is that what you think of me is the most important thing that I have, and so I'll do whatever it is that I need to do in order to get you to agree with me, to like me, to approve of me, and so on. The fourth thing that the ego teaches us, this false self, is that who I am is separate from everyone else. And so we are raised in this world of the false self, which teaches us that we have to be in competition with everyone else. We have to defeat someone else. Being number one is the most important thing. And you see people doing this all the time at football games and at bat. And you'll see it when the Olympics come up, you know, that the gold medal is more important than anything else. And if I don't, you'll see people weeping and sobbing over this idea that I have to be better than somebody else in order to be fulfilled in my life. The fifth thing that the ego teaches us is that I am separate not only from everybody else, but that I am separate from what's missing in my life. The Tao teaches us that there is no place that God is not. If there is no place that God is not, then God must be in you. And if there is no place that God is not, then God must also be in all that I perceive to be missing from my life. And therefore, in order to become a manifester and to attract into my life what I want, I simply have to realign myself. I have to rejoin. I have to yoga myself to God. And the most egregious error of the ego is a belief system that says that who I am is separate from God, that God is something outside of me. We have not been raised to understand and believe that at our basic core, what Lao Tzu called our original nature, what we are is love. And all we have to do is be that and live that. There was a great Indian poet. His name was Rabindranath Tagore. And he received the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1913 for a collection of poetry called the Gitanjali. And in that poem, that long poem, 90-some verses, one of those verses says this. He's speaking of the ego. He said, I went out alone on my way to my tryst. But who is this me in the dark? I step aside to avoid his presence, but I escape him not. He makes the dust rise from the earth with his swagger. He adds his loud voice to every word I utter. He is my own little self, my Lord. He knows no shame, but I am ashamed to come to thy door in his company. That's a great poet, and that's a great piece of truth, that in order to get to this place, I speak about, that Maslow spoke to me about and trained me to think about, called self-actualization, is that we have to stop evaluating who we are on the basis of those ego identifiers and instead begin to see ourselves as divine love.
Reality is one wholeness. It includes all subjects, all objects, and all modes of knowing. What we have access to is a human mode of knowing. You know, in my book, Metahuman, I talk about the butterfly, the painted lady, who smells the world through her antenna, tastes the world through her feet, sees the world with 30,000 lenses that move like a kaleidoscope, okay, hears the world through her wings. What is reality to that little species? Some insects see the world 360 degrees, okay, because they have these what we call complex eyes with multiple lenses. You can only see within a certain range, but there are insects that can see 360 degrees. So what is reality? Reality, what we call reality, what today's science calls reality, comes under the heading of naive realism. Einstein was a naive realist. And I'm not saying this in a derogatory fashion. It's a word in the science of philosophy. Naive realism means that the physical world exists exactly as perceived by the five human senses. Now, obviously, that's not true. Other species experience the world through different modes of sensory perception. The second aspect of naive realism is that the physical world, as perceived by the five human senses, would exist even if no one was observing it. Well, how do you prove that? And firstly, it's naive because we know that the world is more than what is perceived by the five human senses. So this leads us to a solution, actually, of the hard problem of consciousness, which is get rid of the idea that the world is physical. What we call of the world as physical, even your physical body, is a perceptual activity. And that perceptual activity for you and me is a human perceptual activity through human consciousness, not through bat consciousness, not through mosquito consciousness, not through plant consciousness, which would fit in with panpsychism. But non-dualism says, go beyond that. There is only one consciousness that is differentiating, you know, undifferentiated consciousness, differentiating into these different species of consciousness that form a matrix of conscious beings that are collectively projecting this universe.
If there was no time, there would be no space. So time is the basic, not space. Space is an illusion that's been created because we are engaged with our physical natures. So if you disengage with your physical nature, suddenly there is no time, so there is no space. So suddenly what is here is there, what is there is here. People think something miraculous has happened, nothing miraculous happened. It is just that you kept your accumulations aside for a moment, that's all. This needs to be understood. We have a common word both for time and space. We call it kala. Kala means time. Kala also means emptiness. So emptiness means space. Right now we are understanding time as cyclical moments. So we are looking at time in two different dimensions, kala and mahakala, the greater time. The greater time has no cyclical moments. Cyclical moment is because of physical nature. Because of physical nature, there is time in terms of birth and death, in terms of initiation and expiry of everything that happens. Every atom, every electron, every proton, somewhere has an age. Even the very planets and the solar system and the sun has an age. Sometime it has begun and sometime it's going to end. Whether it's going to be a bang or it peters out is is something we can debate.
Sure.
But physicality is not perpetual. It begins and ends. Because of that, we are looking at time in that sense. But there is time beyond cyclical nature. This we call Mahakala. Is there some logical way of explaining it? No. It is just that when you disengage with physical nature, which is the main purpose of yoga, because otherwise, when you engage with your physical nature, you engage with your memory. Your body is just memory, variety of memory. It is functioning in a particular way only because of memory. So when we disengage with physical form, we are disengaging with memory absolutely. When you disengage with memory, suddenly there is no past, present and future. So there is no time. Because there is no time, there is no space, there is no distance, there is no possibility of disengaging.